and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, we've got a multiple author with us today. Not just one book, four books, but we're mainly, I think, going to talk about his latest book called Transcend, Unlocking Humanity in the Age of AI.
Oh, you know, as you might not know, Faisal, but basically I spend a lot of my time with AI right now. I'm working with a guy called Dr. Flint McLaughlin, possibly the father of conversion. He spent millions trying to figure out why people say yes. And it's now manifested into something called MechLabs AI. So I am, you know, literally selling that right now and working with Flint and others to bring that to the world. So I know a little bit about AI, enough to be dangerous. But Faisal Hot, you're not dangerous when it comes to this. You know it backwards. You've written the book, Transcend. Welcome, Faisal, to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you for having me. I don't think anybody can claim they know everything about AI. I don't think humanity as a whole.
Yeah, but you do. You do. I mean, that's what you're saying with this. I know everything about AI, it says on the front cover. It says, number one Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author of Reinvent, Lift, and Everything Connects. Wow. No, honestly, serious credentials. We wish you every success with this book. But what is it about? I mean, Kevin read out the label, but what is it actually about?
Look, I mean, you know, this is actually my 10th book, and I've been in the tech industry slash business for 30 years. I've had several companies, all tech companies, and also, you know, worked with a number of large organizations, both in private sector and public sector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I finished the last book, which was called Reinvent, this was like a couple of years ago, we kind of felt that, you know, there's a whole thing that we should be talking about when it comes to technology that focus on humanity, because humanity, as we know, is going to be dramatically affected in terms of what kind of jobs do we have, how we interact with each other. What's the social norm becomes as norm, how we govern, et cetera, et cetera. So, and because of the very nature of artificial intelligence technology, in the sense that we have never been in a situation in human history where technology could be not just as smart as we are, it has a potential to be even more smarter than we are, in the context of thinking and pattern recognition, and even mimicking emotional intelligence to a certain extent. So when you think about that, then you have to question, okay, so what's left that defines humanity as humanity, and how does that allows us or doesn't allow us to move forward? So that was kind of the big question that we kind of put in front of us while we're working on Transcend.
Well, that's a really good summary. So what's the answer?
Answer is we don't know the answer. That's really the answer.
So that's about one page. So, I mean, you've got about 300 mm-hmm. pages there. I mean,
right.
Okay, so I don't know the answer. Read the book.
It's really being able to deal with the unknown, and how we navigate the unknown and still thrive and kind of constantly take us forward, right? And in the process of doing, as you know, there are as many AI enthusiasts, there is also an equal amount of people who are seriously concerned because of all the issues that comes with it, right? Meaning the governance aspect of it, privacy, intellectual property, identity, surveillance. I've done quite a bit of work in defense industry. So all that comes in play. So in terms of the book, what we did, we first tried to explain with philosophy what it really means to be a human and what part of human worthwhile to protect, right? And how do we go about it? That's first element of it. Second element of it is that, well, what is the intersection between humanity and philosophy so that we can ethically guide our thought process as user, as inventors, and as organization and as government. The next element is, you know, the management, because organization and government obviously are going to decide a lot of things we do as a whole. And the third element is obviously the fourth element is obviously the technology. So if you really want to understand AI, you have to kind of look at the convergence of philosophy, humanity, you know, business or slash management and technology. And we created a framework called Open and Care. Open is to guide the opportunities, you know, and it's obviously an acronym. I'll explain it in a minute. And then Care is for governing so that we can kind of keep it, you know, establish the guardrail so that we don't go completely out of our way to destroy ourselves.
So you've taken a stab, probably more than a stab. I'm not sure how anybody given this challenge to figure out where humanity is going to be placed in this future of, because AI is not going to be disinvented. So from that point of view, humanity's got to have some sort of roadmap. And by that, you're talking on behalf of others, aren't you? So basically, this is a recommendation to other people. You're saying governments, and let's face it, they've got to, you know, thumbs in their ears, haven't they? They're not necessarily going to listen to you unless it gets some votes. But at the end of the day, you're going to try and use this book as a means of entering that dialogue that says, look, we have to become more this rather than that. And is there some kind of, in the last chapter, saying, good luck, I'm heading for the hills? Or is there, you know, which I won't blame you, you know, because to be honest with you, I'm not sure there is an answer. As you said, there's only so much you can go down the road with this.
So it's, no, look, I mean, I'm equally optimistic and equally pessimistic about this. So let me tell you the optimistic element of it. So when you talk about, you know, teaching people who has some sort of a learning disability, you know, who can possibly just read, they need other mechanism to learn, right? Yeah. Or think about by the way, the book proceeds goes all to cancer research, because I have a cancer surviving son. So that's why it goes where it goes. So if you think about patients, you know, who are suffering from cancer, the ability to very customized treatment and very personalized treatment with the help of AI's pattern recognition and vast predictive modeling capability by collecting the right data set, is hugely important and could be life-changing. Or think about an emerging market where you have this very multicultural, multidimensional, multilingual customer base. You're using a multilingual chatbot that can now actually interact because that audience can't even read or write, right? So, so these are monumentally impactful application of AI, and I'm not just talking about generative AI. I'm talking AI, you know, an array of AI models that will help us do that sort of a thing. So those are all the positive things, and it applies to individual, it applies to organization, and it applies to our government in terms of how we look at it. So. So my recommendation, in terms of from a optimistic, you know, thinker, doer, and influencer, is that we have to explore these, right? And we have to have different options. What gives us the biggest return? And when I'm talking about return, I'm not just talking about a financial return. I'm talking about actually human impact that could actually do something for you, right? So that's on the positive side. If you look at negative side, you know, you can look at, say, look, we is actually very subset who are actually creating the core platform technology of AI, right? It is the big vendors with billions of dollars in funding that are creating those models, and then everybody's kind of adopting that, right? So we don't really are all the creators. We are application creator maybe, but not necessarily the core technology. So why does it matter? Well, the reason it matters because engine is where the data biases comes in, ability to supersede people's privacy and personal space crossover. I mean, you're already seeing there are talks about creating these devices. OpenAI just introduced this notion with Johnny Ive that they're going to create these new set of devices that will listen. We already kind of saw that with Google Glass, but it's the next step where it's constantly going to look not just at you, but your environment. So you walk in a bar and you're collecting data. That's everybody in a bar or a restaurant, right? So that gets a little pervasive, it creates a whole set of issues, right? And then we don't have really legislative framework yet that kind of decides who can do what. And by the way, unlike nuclear energy, everybody has access to this, right? So when you look at that, so with the reason, the way you looked at that CARE framework is from that pessimistic point of view, because CARE starts with catastrophic scenario. That's what the C stands for. So you have to look at catastrophic scenarios and say, okay, well, just because we can, should we be doing it? And if we don't want to do it, how do we prevent it? And there's a technological element to it, there's a governance element to it, and there's actually an ethical and moral element to it that every single one of us are part and parcel of it, right? Because we're all using, so we can all decide we don't want to use it. Like, it's like smoking cigarette. We know it's bad, but some people still smoke cigarette, right? So should we be doing it? So those sort of
The last
things.
few people smoking cigarettes are billionaires because they continue to use it. I mean, that would be it's almost like it's not a zero sum game because you can't opt out of an AI, or you can.
No, you can't.
And well, you can give yourself the illusion that you've opted out, and you kind of live a very humble life, and that's probably not a bad thing. But the point is, you've not. You're still subject to things around you.
100%,
And
100%. I
so
mean,
I,
and
how on
by the way,
earth?
we, yeah, I mean, by the way, we have been subject to AI for a long time.
Yeah.
We just haven't been talking about it because generative AI didn't gain momentum up until 2, 3 years ago. But if you think about, like a weather forecast, or whether you look at GPS, you look at, the early stage of automated phone answering, right? These are all automated logic. That are non-generative AI models, right? So there's predictive models and automation model that has been around for years and years and years. So we've been all subject to that, right? I mean, we just didn't realize it. So, and
It
then the
is
reality
scary though, isn't
is,
it, Faisal? I mean,
it is
it is
absolutely.
scary. And your negative side, this idea of a catastrophic sort of, presumably the part of the catastrophe is that we all get seen off by robots.
Well, or we get controlled by a handful of people. It's just not that robot replace. So look, here's what's already happening, right? Increasingly, you're going to be behind if you're not using AI, whether you're a student, whether you're a worker, or whatever it is, because somebody with AI is going to do things faster than you are, right? So that's already there, right? Second phase would be that there are already prediction over the next 3, 5, 10 years. Most of the not just manual labor, meaning robot stacking the warehouse, but let's say white collar jobs like the ones what you do or I do, or we're writing and we're speaking and we're building companies. These are all very white collar jobs. Even most of those jobs are going to be replaced. So the question is, what happens? It's not just being controlled. What happens if none of us have any job, right? Let's say, okay, you can argue that, well, actually, that's not going to be the case because there'll be lots of new jobs created as a result of that. But I think that if you actually do the economic model behind it, I actually wrote a piece a few weeks ago that the economic case for saving human jobs is because the early stage jobs, which is the younger generation, right, If they don't have any opportunity, look at all the conflict zones on the planet, right? All the conflict zones on the planet starts with young people frustrated with their lives because they don't have a direction. They may have money, but they may not have direction, right? If you don't have direction, you can go back to Maslow's hierarchy. You may have your food, you may have your shelter, but if you cannot self-actualize with some sort of purpose, you become dysfunctional and in many ways destructive, right? So this is where catastrophic scenario comes, not just the sci-fi scenario of the Terminator showing up your door, but we're basically self-destructing our own human
Yeah, that
society.
is the piece of AI taking over our lives that does probably concern me the most, because it's very good at replacing low-level, repetitive jobs.
Today, but
Yeah.
tomorrow it may even go farther, right? Because,
Indeed, indeed.
yeah.
But you then say, hold on a minute, anybody new to the workforce,
Yeah.
where are they going to get the experience from
Exactly.
to make that step to being senior in the workforce? And we're at the stage that, a lot of the things we're doing with AI is that we're making AI work for us. We're increasing our output. A lot
Right.
of the things that I do with it, I am doing things that previously I might have asked a research assistant to go away and do.
Yep,
Yeah.
exactly.
And you then say, well, hang on, the research assistant of yesterday is the leader of today. Where if you completely take out that layer of jobs, how do people progress? And that
Yeah,
to me
this is.
says we're heading for a mess.
Yeah, that's precisely my argument, right? So my economic argument to that is that, look, you can't have a bunch of people, a vast number of people, especially the younger generation, out of work. Because if you do that, there's the economic impact. Where do they have the money to? Well, you can argue that, well, it will be universal, the pay that every government will create, but that's not enough, right? So you're going to have an economic and intellectual gap, that's going to be very difficult to make up. So this is where the moral argument comes in, that you have to be cautious, and you have to kind of look at AI as a re not as a replacement, but as an augmentation, and as a perhaps as a partner. So maybe that younger research assistant that you have, and I have struggled with this too, because I have research team, I have development team, and I have a team who does graphic design and all kinds of other stuff. You have to make a conscious decision that, do I want to replace this younger generation, or do I want to maybe augment them and arm them up with these technologies, but I teach them my experience so that they can reach in a few years same level as a senior person, right? And so that's a conscious decision, but that's also a costly decision, because now it's taking you're tapping into your profit, right? Meaning you're going to be less profitable. So is it a moral obligation that you, for the sake of society, you make less profit? Or what does that do to capitalism, right? So these are very big questions. So when you're saying, sort of tongue in cheek, that I don't know the answer, but I have, me and my team kind of outline these questions and
Faisal, don't feel in any way abused, because I treat every guest like that. I mean, they all come on here, but none of them know the answer, really. I mean, it's I mean,
Yeah,
but, you,
sure.
but no, I'm only kidding. You clearly do know a lot of the at least a lot of the questions, and I don't think you're so unhumble to, if that's the right word, to say that I know all the answers. But the one question that goes through my mind when we consider all this, and the because you're talking about demographics there with youth, older people, I know Elon Musk has thought about this quite a bit, and he says, that's why he's a great populator of the world with new children everywhere. That is there a case for more people or less?
I don't know. I'm concerned about the people that are right now. I mean, if we are so focused on job replacement, what happens to the? I mean, think about Okay, think about like somebody who's like 16, between 16 and let's say 27, right? So the 16-year-old, maybe high enough, just out of high school. So where do they go? They go, they work at a coffee bar or they work at a restaurant or whatever. So, you're talking about Elon Musk. A couple of months ago, when Nvidia announced the N1 system and the IoT devices that creates these self learning robots, and simultaneously they announced that they're making a deal with Yum Brand, who owns Taco Bell, to replace the repetitive work in Taco Bell. So I remember my college days. I used to work in one of those places, right? As a starting point, right? So where does the 16-year-old go? I also all that, well, maybe they can drive a Uber. Well, sorry, he can't because there's no self-driving car, right? So on and so on and so forth, right? So I am not, I'm not, but I don't have the smarts of Elon Musk to think through how he thinks that more population is going to save the humanity because we are having lower pop, you know, we're decreasing the global population. I'm concerned about the people
Yeah,
that
but
we
you're right.
have.
If the population that we have, and you're absolutely the right starting point is how many people do we have now? And that's about, what, 8 billion or something. So basically 8 billion people are currently living. I think my point was is I think Musk is more or less saying, certainly the Western countries, we need more just to survive, well, things like pensions and so forth. Because that doesn't come from a pot, it comes from the people who are actively working now. So the older people are thinking, well, is there enough people to keep paying my pension? And the younger people are saying, how do I get a job? And on my daily walk, I walk through a farm and I talked to the farmer there, and I think he was saying a little while ago that he needed to get a like a farm hand, and it's quite hard. And I'm thinking, well, maybe a robot. Now he's got a lovely little dog. But she's a bit too young to start chasing the sheep around at the moment. But basically, a robot probably would be a reasonable thing. Well, I think the cows might be a bit worried about it, but you still need that type of labor.
No, I mean, so I mean, do you want somebody just stocking the shelves all day long? Do you want somebody chase the sheep in the farm all day long? Maybe not. But you also have to think about, okay, well, and we have seen this in every kind of technologically driven revolution, industrial stage, or even when the steam engine came and we went through the basic automation, we saw these kind of a turnover and new jobs and whatnot. The problem that we cannot underestimate is that those were, and the history of AI goes all the way back to like 11th century when some people started thinking about the intelligent machines, that basically mechanical machines that will do a lot of this work that we're talking about, chasing the sheep on the farm. But the challenge with this is that we've never had in human history something that is actually smarter than we are, right? So what does that mean? That we have been, elevating the jobs that are more intellectual, if I can use that word. But if that's replaced and your physical work is also replaced, what's left, right? So this is where we have to balance, right? So I mean, balancing act comes becomes, if you want to protect humanity, we have to take, and in my book I go into deeply philosophical element of Eastern philosophy because I'm a practice, I'm a believer and a practitioner of Eastern philosophy. So if you look at the Buddhist way of middle path, the only way, only hope for humanity, I believe, is the middle path where we balance innovation with destruction, right? And if we don't, then I think we're going to have a very different kind of world.
Destruction being.
Do whatever we want to do, have robots take over, replace all our jobs, except this is like self-destruction without the realization that that's what we're doing.
Is it actually possible to govern this? Yes, an individual government could come up with some rules, but unless every government follows the same set of rules, it's not going to work. Like, if
You're
you do
100% correct.
things in China that you can't do in the USA, well, stuff's going to get done there. And there's going to be a great big void elsewhere as a result of it.
100%. So if you look at nuclear energy as an example, how did we control that, right? How are we controlling that, right? Because a set of government got together and said, these are the rule of the planet. And you can argue, is this the right thing to do? Because even then, that scenario, somebody will argue, there's only a handful of people are controlling it and rest of the planet is not. But it's somewhat controlled, meaning that it's not like you and I can tomorrow morning decide, hey, let's build a nuclear plant, right? We can't do that. It's highly regulated, right? Even pharmaceutical industry, to a certain extent, is regulated. Now, if you look at AI, it's not regulated at all, partly because of the very nature of the technological evolution that has happened with information technology, right? I mean, it's easy to, it's easy to distribute software. And at the end of the day, AI is a huge part of AI is software, but now it's you have the computing power that's centralized, right? So meaning all the GPU that's on the cloud or whatever. So we have whether we like it or not, the governments has to get together and we'll have to put some guardrail. If we don't, we're gonna end up creating a mess. And somebody may argue that it's already a mess and the
Yeah,
genie's
I
out of the
think,
box.
well, all you have to do is look at our government. But basically, yeah, I mean, there's a reasonable chance that they're making a real mess of it. But having said that, one of the things that occurs to me is that we are heading to a flatter society with peaks in the middle or at the end or whatever you want to, sort of like a curve where it jumps up at the end. The 1%ers, the 0.5%ers, whatever, the people who can control, but the rest, whether it's going to be a universal wage or whatever they're talking about, one thing about people is that work gives them purpose, gives them, I don't know what's the right word, but it gives us a sense of self-actualization, as you said with Maslow. But basically, the thing that concerns me, the absence of work will you could argue, I think you did argue that basically that a lot of the wars in the world start from the absence of wealth or work. And if that's the case, then we can look forward to a hell of a lot more wars.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, my whole argument, which we just talked about. I mean, there's stories after stories. Look at the Arab Wellspring and all that stuff, right? Who started this? It's younger generation, frustrated younger generation who doesn't have the prosperity and purpose. They get frustrated and they start things. I mean, look, I'm originally from Bangladesh. Not too long ago, the younger generation just toppled a dictator government after 16, 17 years, and many young people died because they're frustrated that they don't have the opportunity for self-actualization, right? So you're not gonna, because why young people? Because that's when you dream, right? As we got older, what we usually do is that we have achieved this, can we make impact, right? So that's kind of how human progression goes. What happens with the younger generation? I haven't achieved anything yet. I have these dreams and I want to make it happen, but I don't have any means to make it happen because I'm controlled, whatever that control means. Controlled by circumstances, controlled by the society, controlled by lack of access, controlled by the government, whatever the case may be. So I cannot self-actualize my dream. So that's a very frustrating situation, right? I mean, when you're in 50s or 60s, you kind of start thinking, you start kind of accepting certain parts of the world as we know, and then try to survive within that. Younger generation doesn't have that. They want to self-actualize. So that's why one of my biggest concern is that it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that if the younger generation, the entry-level jobs goes away, and the younger generation doesn't have the things that they could, what's the point of going to college then? Or what would you do You've got a college degree, but it's all you're replaced by an AI. So you can't go do that job, right? So this is what, so the older generation, people who are in their mid 40s, 50s, 60s, who are now the leaders of organization, this is their responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a tough ask for them as well, though. But I
Yes.
you know, this is an incredibly interesting area, Faisal. You've obviously looked at this in some depth, talked it through. Is there anyone that you recognize, and apart from yourself, of course, which, I take it, but is there anyone in the world that you feel has more or less nailed the problem? Not as in it doesn't know all the answers, but is at least has a direction of travel. Is it the Chinese? Bugger the climate change, because frankly that's a myth anyway. But effectively, let's just build coal-fired power stations and run our economy as fast as we can. Have they got it right? Or is there somebody else? I'm maybe not just talking about lead, a company lead, sorry, politicians, but potentially company leaders. Is there anybody who's got anywhere close to this?
No, but we're learning, right? I mean, you can already see that companies who try to, I mean, let's look at a micro level, not a very macro level, right? So if you had to look at micro level, a number of companies, whether that's Zillow or whether that's a recent example of I think JP Morgan, where they went far ahead with AI and replaced a whole bunch of people, realizing that there's element of humans. It's still today that you cannot replace. So we have to figure out as business leaders, how do you coexist, right? And how do you encourage this younger population to rise? Because otherwise you're going to become obsolete as organizations. So there's pockets of this implementation of this thinking that's happening. If you talk about the thinking and call to action, there's a number of people are calling for this all over the globe. Whether that's Geoffrey Hinton, is in his Nobel acceptance speech, or whether people like me writing books, or whether Yuval Harari writing his last book called Nexus, all of us are with this kind of thinking, calling for this, right? It's in the auspices of responsible AI, in the auspices of humanity first, AI second. So we're all calling for it, but collectively what will happen is what each of those organization first, but also as a government and society, we do or don't, right? So I mean, that's why it's a collective responsibility. I don't think handful of people is gonna, it's a drop in a bucket, right? So collectively what we do and we don't, and how we what we call for and what we practice is going to make the difference or not going to make the
But
difference.
so there's you and a bunch of people like you that are talking about this. Do you think what you're saying has got much traction within government yet?
So with my government work, there is traction, despite whatever you hear about U.S. government. And my work is with U.S. government. The people, because there is the executive branch and there's actual agencies and the people that does the work, right? So if you talk to those leaders, whether it's in a military organization or a civilian organization, a vast number of people are very much concerned about this, because it's not just job loss, but also there are ethical implication, meaning data collection, data distribution, data manipulation, information manipulation, false identity, misinformation, etc., etc. So those folks are very much concerned, and practitioners in terms of guardrail. And I wouldn't say, a lot of the things you hear is not quite there in terms of implementation. We're talking about it doesn't mean that people are actually full-blown implementing it. A lot of the hype we hear is more from the consumer uses, not necessarily enterprise usage, right? So a couple of months ago when we wrote this piece for Sloan Review, you know, we were doing research and we found out that, you know, only 4% to 6% people who are actually implemented AI is getting actual any benefits, financial or otherwise, from AI. So I think we're in early stages of that enterprise implementation, if I can use that word. But on the consumer level, it's getting kind of you know, crazy, just like social media happened, because you know, we now can create funny video, can like mimic other people, you know, come up with the you know, the superhero package, whatever the case may be. So it gets a lot of traction, but on the enterprise level, I think we're in very much an early stage.
I think you're right. I think it's definitely, my experience is certainly that the you know, even things like AI agents I provide, etc., for lead generation and things like that, and web pages and stuff. It should be a fairly no brainer decision,
right?
But it's still not sure. And it's that kind of conversation. But you know, the guy who does it and they don't, they're the one who are going to lose out because of the way in which these things work. But for me, I'm generally positive, but I find sometimes it's really difficult. It's really easy to allow yourself to be negative, but I think you have to be sort of positive, but with caution. But that, I don't know how that manifests in a day-to-day life, because effectively what you're saying is that you want governments to put guardrails up, but they're not going to do that. It's like, you know, I want it out of the European Union for a good reason, because I don't trust any of them. I really don't trust them. I just don't think they've got the best interest. If they'd wanted a level playing field so we can all trade with each other, I'm all in. But you want to tell me to, I want to have an European army, I want you to, you know, abide by our rules and all that, and all these, you know, straight bananas, all that kind of nonsense. Basically, don't want to know. Let us be an independent, self-governing country. Now we've got a person who doesn't want to do that. But the point is, what I'm trying to get at is that I think it is a bit like chickens or turkeys voting for Christmas. Not going to do it. They will allow
So what I'm somewhere in between, right?
Yeah.
What will happen is that they are not going to do at a right now, or because there are conflicting interests and whatever, national interest and economic interest and whatever, right? So, but what will happen, just like it happened with social media as an example, you know, there are lots of rules that were non-existent in terms of, like, you know, what's the right of an individual in terms of you taking their data and selling to somebody else? Or what's the right of an individual when you are taking their identity and bullying them, or you know, doing catfishing, etc., etc.? There's no rule or law that existed even 3-5 years ago around these topics, right? Now we have a little more of that. I think same thing will happen with AI, as we're going to start seeing a slew of crime, because what will happen, the citizens are going to ask for it, right? So how does law gets built? Law gets built because citizen asks their government representative that he got to do something, right?
Then
it will happen, right? But I don't think it will happen in the short term, because technology has always been ahead of the government rules and framework and regulation and that sort of a thing.
It seems to me that you are a thought leader in this space. If you had to put a number on it, shall we call it the percentage that I think I'll be right by the time I die? Let's just say that you've got another, looking at you, you've got another 50 years, right? So basically, in another 50 years' time, will I have got the decisions, or at least the thought process that I have right now for the 50th year? So, you know, I'm going to be lucky to have 50 years, but let's just say I've got 50 years. And Kevin, well, I wouldn't buy a Christmas tree for you if I was Kevin. You know, what can I say? I'm wasting your money. But basically, if you're looking at 50 years, what is the percentage chance that you're going to be right with your current assessment of AI and humanity?
Well, the reality is that I don't, my assessment is that we don't know, right? So what I'm saying is that if we don't get this right and get our stuff together within next 5 years, we're gonna be regretting whatever we are doing. Because the exponential growth that we have seen in last 3 years, 4 years, is nothing like we have seen before. Partly because, you know, I mean, computing power adds more computing power. It kind of like Moore's law doesn't apply anymore, right? I mean, we're gone far faster than Moore's law in terms of that, you know, everything goes faster as we keep building up. So from that context, I don't think that if we don't get this stuff right within next 5 years time frame, we're going to look at a very different world.
Okay, so I'm going to just take that 5 out of 50. We've got a 10% chance of getting this right.
I mean,
One way of
I'm
looking
more
at it,
hope
Graham.
I'm more hopeful than 10%.
You just said 10%. I'm just putting words back into your mouth for your next book, so you can credit me. Don't worry about that.
I tell you, the thing that actually bothers me about this, Graham, is that we're talking now about a problem that might come along in the future. In fact, we're talking about a problem that will
You've
come.
forgotten our name. The next 100 days. It is a future focused
But
podcast.
think about that. Now, I reckon the average politician only ever focuses on the crisis that's happening now.
Well, that's true.
Now, that's the problem, that it'll take the average politician the next 5 years. And there will be a crisis before they start worrying about this.
Yeah,
And
well,
as I said, if we haven't sorted it in 5 years, it's too late.
Yeah, so my point is that you know, as I was talking about social media and the rules and whatever, you know, the growth is so fast in this area. There will be crises within next couple of years that will force people either to do something about it or not do something about it, right? That's what I mean by what happens to the future 50 years. Who knows what will happen in 50 years? But we're going to start seeing either a course correction or balanced approach or not, right? And you're going to see outcry from the population, you know, the ranks and files globally, if you're not doing any course correction, and we have kind of
And
toppled.
they're actually mentioning social media is a good example. Proves that everything is going to go wrong because the only course corrections we've seen on social media so far have been after it's been too late.
Right. Well, that when we talked about this momentarily, you know, a moments ago, where I was saying that it was too late to put a lot of the rules and regulation, but we are finally getting to it. So same thing will happen with AI. The question is that are we going to do that on time, or all, you know, we're lost already, because proliferation of AI is a lot faster than anything else we have seen, and the power of AI is a lot bigger than we have ever seen. So because it is that way, there's tons of opportunity, but there's also a ton of these, you know, the call it a warning sign, you know, for
I think this
humanity.
has been probably one of the most thought-provoking podcasts we've had for weeks, because basically you're addressing a problem that is incredibly difficult to sort of rationalize and think through. But at least you are actually pitching in with ideas and almost like a structure for people to think it through. Love the fact that you're using philosophy. Love the fact that you're using almost like religious concepts to come through with at least an answer that many people in the world will respect and wish to follow as see as a way forward. So you've been an amazing guest, Faisal Haque, on the Next 100 Days podcast. I'd like to thank you for joining us.
Well, Graham, we talk about AI a lot on this podcast, but that really has taken us into an area of philosophical debate as opposed to practically how do we use this stuff?
It puts it all into context a little bit, doesn't it? But these things are going on in the world, and if you're a listener and you're thinking that wasn't a useful debate, then maybe you weren't really listening. But at the end of the day, for me, it is a really it's probably the most critical question that humanity has got to deal with. And don't give me climate change, because have a look at all these islands that were filmed about 150 years ago, and look at the sea level, and look at the sea level today. So basically, that's not a problem. The problem that we've got for survival is whether or not we can tame the worst excesses of AI. Because if we don't, then as Faisal points out, then it's going to be a bit of a rougher
And
ride.
Graham, there is a point that we never got on to talking about with Faisal, but if all of this work is going to be replaced and all of us can be that much more productive, well, there's the opportunity here for to go to some sort of nirvana, and we work one day or 2 days a week and the other four or five are leisure. But will any government ever allow that to happen and give us the finances that will allow that to take place?
Well, yeah, they'll give you the finances, but you won't be earning the kind of money that you are now. And the chances are they'll ship you out of the house that you're living in, because basically that's going to be for somebody who is working, and but you're not, so therefore you're going to be into this, probably structured tent thing that they're going to have in Newcastle somewhere, where you'll have to go there and share your life with a Sunderland fan next to you in another tent. Truth is, who knows? The whole idea of this is that if we have a flat society, don't think you're all going to be on 100,000 quid a year. It's not going to be like that. And because the finances have got to be produced by technically fewer
And
people.
that says there's a society where it's not even going to be the 1% that have got all the money. It's going to be a percentage that could be somewhat smaller than that.
Very much, in my view. I think Faisal would probably agree with that. Look, who knows? The thing is, AI should make things cheaper anyway, with robots, rather than one robot working 24 hours is going to be that costs next to nothing, versus two people working the same 24 hours, having to take breaks, etc. Naturally, because we all tire. So, and the whole idea of that is that you've got a better production cost, so potentially things could get cheaper. If we get AI to resolve some of the world's problems, I think that was hinted at earlier. And that's the positive side. Things like cancer. Interesting that Faisal's, son's a cancer sort of survivor, and the funds from Transcend, his book, will go to cancer research. Now, that's an amazing gift from him. And if you get a chance to get his book, I'm sure you'll find it on Amazon. But basically, it's called Transcend. His name is Faisal Hoque, Hoque. Now, if Que, sorry. And you can find more about Faisal at his website, which is faisalhoque.com. So, go and find out a bit more about that, because he's obviously delving into this. Don't know if we came up with too many answers. It's equal. I'm sort of in the middle, but think a lot of good things are going to come. And I just don't trust the government to get this right, Kevin.
The thing is, I just don't trust any government to get this right, including the left-wing persuasion or the right-wing persuasion. Politicians have too many vested interests
Sure.
and to think about the good of society as a whole.
The first AI robot MP for your area, Kevin. I wander around and he'll shake your hand, and you'll vote for this robot. Who knows
Well,
what's coming?
that'd be no problem because providing this area, providing he's got a Labour Party rosette on, he'll get voted in, no problem.
Well, yeah. Oh, that is a terrible thought. But right, okay. And on that bombshell, today I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.